Welcome to Right Spokane Perspective with your host, Tim.
And Shannon.
It's opinion, fact, information, and your alert system. Stay tuned and enjoy the show. And welcome to Right Spokane Perspective on this Mike Allen Monday episode. We have former Councilman Mike Allen in the studio with us today. We're going to talk about the fall of the Roman Empire. The American Empire. And a little bit of financial information. We're going to banter about politics and how we spend or how they're spending all of our money after inspiration.
Our inspiration today is Joy in the City. When France and Argentina met in the 2022 World Cup final, it was an incredible contest that many dubbed the greatest World Cup match in history. As the final seconds ticked off in extra time, the score was tied 3-3, sending the soccer teams to penalty kicks. After Argentina made the winning goal, the nation erupted in celebration. More than a million Argentinians overwhelmed downtown Buenos Aires. Drone footage spread across social media showing this happy scene. One BBC report described how the city quaked with an explosion of joy. Joy is always a wonderful gift. Proverbs, though, describes how a city, a people, can experience joy that goes even deeper and lasts far longer. When the righteous prosper, Proverbs says, the city rejoices. When those who truly live by God's design for humanity begin to influence a community, this signals good news because it means God's justice is taking hold. Greed diminishes, the poor find support, the oppressed are protected. Whenever God's right way of living flourishes, then there's joy and blessing in the city. If we're genuinely living out God's ways, then the result will be good news for everyone. The way we live will make the community around us a better and more whole place to live. God invites us to be a part of his work to heal the world. He invites us to bring joy to the city. Heavenly Father, please help us to join you in bringing joy to others. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Well, I'm not sure I'm going to be bringing joy, but I'm glad that you brought up the games, the bread and circus of the Olympics and soccer, because I don't know if we need to build another one of those stadiums with tax dollars, but we're going to talk about how we spend tax dollars today.
You didn't see the Velocity game?
The Velocity game?
Yes.
Oh, that's right. That's right. How many games are they going to have? I mean, it's...
I think they play every weekend is kind of
every weekend.
Is. Yeah.
They're going to air 7 on KSKN 22.
I think ESPN2 is carrying a lot of games for the USL as well.
So the taxpayers are, so far, it's only $25 million or $30 million per game right now for the taxpayers' portion of the cost, even if they don't like soccer. So let's talk about the bread and circus, because you and I, we were on social media and talking about basically the fall of the American Empire, really, because... there's just money everywhere, and there's got to be compromise.
Actually, no, we're creating money everywhere. There's not actually money
anywhere.
It doesn't
grow on trees. Yeah. It's not just everywhere.
That's right. Well, it's digital now, so we don't have to cut down the trees, right? Not as many.
So that still means it doesn't really exist.
It does not.
Yeah, it's more like Bitcoin at this point, it seems like, except, and there is a virus. You know, I think this blockchain thing kind of scares me because, you know, somebody injects some kind of virus that goes throughout and then it's just gone. I mean, that kind of seems like what's happened politically to us. And we both agree, both political parties have failed the public in their fiduciary duties because the public have to pay their bills. There's a limit of debt that the public can get into as individuals, but in the public spending, it seems like there is no limit.
And this isn't the first time our country has dealt with this. If you go back and look at Hamilton, the whole reason and one of the things, the most important thing that Hamilton did was consolidating the finances of the United States. When all the different young states were out there, they all had their own currency and they all had their ability to run in their own debt and they all ran themselves basically into bankruptcy. And he was, I believe, the Secretary of Treasury at the time. And he said, hey, here's the deal. We'll buy all your debt, but you have to use our currency, and then you have to pass a balanced budget every single year from here on out. So that's the reason states and municipalities have to have a balanced budget, theoretically. And
depends on how they sell their bonds or whatever they've done, whatever financial tool they've used to escape the international or the national agreement, really. And so
yes, and only the federal government can carry a deficit on a budget.
And we should try to find a way to get away from that as well, because we're finding ourselves in a place where I think we're going to spend ourselves, and maybe this is by design, but we're going to spend, both political parties are spending us into a debt that will just usher in a global currency and we'll have no sovereignty as a country.
This is one of the things you and I were kind of bantering back and forth is Republicans pretend to care about the budget, but they don't actually care about the budget. I mean, that really is the brass tacks of it, because yeah. Spending increases under every single Republican president. Yep, that's just the reality of it is.
I say it seems like they spend a little less. The competition is who's bankrupting us faster.
Well, the Republicans put tax reductions in there and accelerate the downside of the revenue, yeah. Where generally the Democrats will accelerate the spending side and they don't really care about revenue.
Yeah.
So, and that's what's led us to this $33-34 trillion deficit, is that you have a situation where you got one party who gives tax breaks but also increases expenditures, and the other one who wants more taxes if they can find it, but they're not going to reduce their spending at all. And that's how we got here.
Well, increasing spending faster than you have revenue. And I've talked about it on the show all the time. Washington state budget. And this is not something that we're talking about just because, well, you know, back in the 50s or the 20s or in the 1800s, we're talking about just in the last 20 or so years, yeah. We've gone totally insane. We had a state budget in 2003 of like $24 billion in mm-hmm. Washington state. It's yep. Now $72
billion. Yeah.
We're on a trajectory of financial collapse.
And at the state level, we do have to pass a balanced budget.
But we get federal money.
But we do, but the bulk of the budget is still internally driven at the state level. The challenge we've got is that the state legislature has never found a nickel it didn't want to spend. So when we have really prosperous times, and we've had some pretty prosperous times in our states over the past 20 years, we had a couple of bumps along the way.
We're a very productive state.
Yeah, we are. And it's produced a lot of surpluses, and they don't just, you know, say, well, you know what, we're going to reduce taxes by this surplus and use this. They go, what else can we spend money on?
Right. The rainy day fund. Well, it rains in Olympia like every day, so.
Exactly. The other thing that we've ran into, and this is one of the things that's affecting us now, is the American Recovery Act spent trillions of dollars into the states.
I call it the cocaine spending act.
Oh yeah. They spend it like that.
Yeah.
There was so much money, they probably won't be able to spend it all for another 3 years. That's how much money floated through the system.
Well, our local law enforcement, and I'm in favor of our local law enforcement. I think we need lots more of it actually, but we're buying police cars with that money. What if we didn't have that money? Would we have police just on foot?
No, you do what's called hot rolling cars. There's a term I learned on council.
Hot seating, yeah.
Well, and I do ride-alongs with them. It's just like one officer gets out and the seat's still hot when they get in. So
yeah, hot seating. And we're still doing that. That's been...
Yeah, and it's not an atypical practice. I mean, it used to be, I think, in the 70s and 80s where a lot more police officers were able to take their vehicle home. Mm-hmm. But that's neither here nor there.
Well, it's more responsible because then you have officers that are tied to a vehicle. If they're bouncing it off of curbs, you know that it was off to Officer Smith and not Officer Davis. So it's just, we're spending good money after bad all over the place, you know. And I think before we started the show, you know, all the way from, we're spending $250,000 per homeless individual. I call them drug addicts mostly. Unfortunately, that's the case.
It is.
And we have lots of subsidies, free housing, free everything. We're subsidizing our own problem. But at the same time, we give, like, Boeing, just a couple years back, $50 million tax break. You can't have that kind of public spending on both ends of the spectrum.
Well, Boeing is in a little position where they have a lot of political power because they do produce a tremendous amount of revenue for our state all across the board.
And but then they did move a lot of jobs right after that.
Well, one of the things, they moved their headquarters to Chicago because Chicago said, hey, report your income here and we'll give you big breaks. And so they did.
Right. Well, it's just like our current president. He touted, even I believe in his State of the Union address, that his state has more registered businesses than any other state. Interestingly, a Democrat state. But they give the tax breaks to corporate.
Yeah, there's a whole reason. There's a reason Elon Musk also took it away from there.
Yeah,
about a month or two ago, because some judge just arbitrarily decided that Elon Musk doesn't deserve that.
He doesn't deserve that.
That's none of that judge's business, honestly. Well,
it's a similar reason why we saw Bezos leave Washington.
Yeah, he's in the process of it. Yeah,
and so this is where is our government operating constitutionally, and I think I'm. A little, I'm center right. I'm not all the way right. I think I'm center right. I would debate you that you're center, maybe left. in the traditional terms, but the right is off the cliff. Actually, I think the right's banging their head against the wall somewhere in the dark, and the left has gone off of the insanity cliff. They're now in sci-fi land, but we have those things in government pushing the middle to spend more, to do more, to, you know, grow government in all sorts of different ways. I mean, we're spending, like, education spending. That's something that we could get to at some point in the conversation. But where do we see any politicians saying, I'm not getting into elected office to spend more or give tax breaks?
Well, again, this is the same old political tropes that every candidate's been running under in each party for the past 40, 50 years is kind of where we are with, in my personal opinion, where it is. As I was mentioning to you earlier, is like the fact that Bill Maher and I can see and agree on things is freaky to me, man. It's freaky.
It's crazy.
Because I spent most of my, I'm a fiscal conservative. Yeah. I am fairly socially not progressive,
moderate.
I mean, I do believe
I'm labeling
that,
you here because yeah, that's what we do in politics.
I,
right?
I appreciate that. And the radio, it's also,
yeah.
But it's also one of these things where the left has gone way, way left. And I mean, way left. And so, and they're pulling the party the entire way. And as I mentioned, if you go, there's a SCOTUS reply by Biden from about 89, I think it is, who he sounds remarkably like a Republican.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's just like Clinton. He sounded a lot like a Republican would sound today,
yeah,
when he did his State of the Union address talking about, you know, fiscal responsibility, closing the border, you know, having safer streets.
Clinton, I have to say, is probably one of the luckiest presidents ever because the economy was already recovering when he came in. And the big reason he got elected, one, Perot got 19% of the vote, and that 19% came from Bush.
Yeah.
You know, and he, right, and Clinton only won by, I think, 2 percentage points.
There was a split in the vote, and you know, they always talk about that suburban mom or suburban women, and he was the most attractive candidate. That was a thing at that time.
He was the most attractive candidate, but he also hit that upcycle, and then he also hit a secondary upcycle in the economy with the .com electronic boom that came when the internet, when AOL was sending those CDs to everyone's house who may even not have a house, but sending those CDs to get them online.
That's right, yep.
So that actually created a whole new industry in our country that really grew the economy significantly.
Many industries out of that industry.
Yeah, it really did. And we had the BRAC closures. So we had the peace dividend coming out of the late 80s when we won the Cold War under Reagan. And so he looked like a genius. The budget actually got decreased during his time, but he had nothing to do with it.
Well, we know that he wasn't creating fiscal policy in the Oval Office. He was doing other things.
I'm not going to touch that. Is that the right?
Yeah. Well, he wasn't, you know, guiding policy. He was just a figurehead. And that's the problem we have, is we have figurehead presidents. We have a populace that's trained by the media to, look at the president as almost like some kind of, I don't know, TV preacher, right? Like they're going to save you, you know, you're going to give them a donation and you're going to go to heaven or something. And really the power doesn't reside in the presidency. The power resides in Congress. And I want to take a break here, but I want to come back and I want to talk about the local level, because I don't think we can fix the federal insanity, but I think we can start at the local level. And some of it may be just saying no to federal funds because it doesn't work out for us in the long run sometimes. So we're going to take a break. We're going to be right back with Mike Allen, former city councilman and financial road scholar, on the radio with us today. We'll be right back. Thank you for listening to Right Spokane Perspective. We are only on the air and podcast because you support this program, you the listeners. We are listener supported. Keep us on the air to keep all these interviews and shows going. Please go to rightspokaneperspective.com. There's a donate button there. Or you can send your donation to Right Spokane Perspective LLC, P.O. Box 7620-99207. Thanks and back to the show. And welcome back to Right Spokane Perspective. We are again back with Mike Allen. We're going to have to do this more often because we're just having too much fun.
It is actually a lot of fun.
The wasteland of money that's going everywhere by both political parties. And this is where it's so interesting. You know, we went off into the break and talking about the presidency and how the power is really in the Congress. So the public and the news wants to make everyone think, oh, it's that president's fault or that president did a great job, when it's really the Congress that makes the decisions. So it's a much larger group of people making very bad decisions over the last several decades. And we have that even at the local level, where our city budget ballooned, I think, in the last two decades, just like we saw with the state level, a tripling of the budget. I think that's not quite that.
I think the I think the aggregate city budget now is somewhere around $800 million, somewhere around there, with utilities.
With utilities, and but the total, it's over a billion now, right? With everything. I mean,
it may have been. I didn't see that. I didn't dig into the last budget. And
so that's frankly, the general budget.
It's both. It's the general fund budget as well as utilities. Utilities is by far the biggest part of it.
But that doesn't include parks.
It does. Parks is actually part of the general fund budget. And by city charter, our parks automatically get 8% of the general fund.
So it's, so
it's a significant amount. That's the reason we have a lot of nice parks is because the city charter, as it originated, had that specific thing in it.
Well, and you were on the park board, so you have quite a bit of experience there. And, you know, we can go back and, you know, talk about voters and whether they got listened to or not, you know, with soccer stadiums, Joe Albee, you know, Expo. We have government oftentimes that does not listen to the voters. I think fiscally, if government listened to the voters, we would have a lot less financial problems because the voters often say no.
They do. Yeah.
Unless they're lied to.
Unless, well, just they want to know what they're voting for. My experience has been they want to know what they're voting for and what they're getting so they can make an informed decision. The jail this last time around was horribly designed as far as a campaign and messaging and what they were going to achieve with it. And it got smoked and that was the big reason why I think all of us recognize that we need more treatment and jail facilities than we currently have.
Absolutely. I think almost everyone agrees with that, but they're not going to vote for a tax because we voted for a park bond that was like supposed to be $60 million. They ended up spending like $120 million. If we want to look at all the funds that they stole from like the West Central neighborhood, you know, for a bridge, when we look at that and then we see, you know, art pieces that are extremely expensive, stupid, and now just covered with graffiti.
So again, but that stuff is written into art is written into most every public project now.
Yeah.
X amount of dollars have to go to art project. It generally art specifically.
Yeah.
So the original budget was, I think, $64 million for Riverfront Park update. And there was additional dollars because there was interest earned on it, which created another million or two to be able to plow back into it. And also, and Mayor Condon and some of us were on council with working with Gavin Cooley and Rick Romero, we could see that through the street levy that was passed to improve our streets, that we could work together with parks that rather than buying private land and decommissioning that land so it could be used to store water, which is really what it was going to be happening, that we could use park property and pay parks to utilize the land rather than taking more land off the tax rolls. So, I mean, there's some logic behind it. It's just not willy-nilly all the time.
Well, and it's very complicated. And, you know, talking with people, you look at how a project's funded. You know, like the Bridging the Valley projects that are going on out there. You got local, state, federal, the rail system, you know, the Transportation Administration. These are very complex things. And I think what's getting lost in the view of the taxpayer is we pay taxes and then we see how our taxes are used. And we thought, well, we kind of wanted something like that, but did it? It's like the public schools. Yes, we know we need some new public schools, but do they have to look like college campuses?
And that's a valid question. If you look at the schools that were built in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, you could build probably three or four schools for what they're building these Taj Mahal educational centers with now.
And that was something we talked about a couple weeks ago. We were looking at an article where it said that $60 million was going to be too much to pay for a new city hall building, but we paid $78.6 million for a new middle school and just over
$90 million for a high school.
$90 million for a high school. So,
have you been into these schools, the new ones?
So, because
they are something.
Well, they are something. Well, they could have been used as a city hall.
But here's something that we talked about this before, off air. Some of the schools that have the best outcomes for children reading, writing, arithmetic, even children of lower socioeconomic means that are subsidized through grants from church groups. Go to schools where the carpet is still from the 70s and they have a better outcome than these Taj Mahal schools. So I think there's got to be somewhere in the middle where the taxpayer's looking at this stuff. That's why we turned down the bond. Is Why are we building these insane schools? And why is the government lying to us saying this is an environmentally friendly school? You know, the LEED buildings. And you walk into these schools, you know, when you and I went to school, high school, middle school, any school, our generation, I don't care where you were in the country, you walked in the main doors, the office was to the right, there was classrooms to the left, classrooms down to the hall in front of you. Now you walk into a school and there's like 60,000 square feet of just glass
open space. Yep, there is.
Then you have to walk through the hallways and then there's, you know, 20,000 square feet on each side in different doors for multifunction rooms that get used once a week. It's insane.
It is. I think the schools have been overbuilt, personally. I do. Now, I voted for most school bonds. I have, because I do believe in an investment in the kids. But there has to be kind of a balance. If you look at your property taxes, you know, everyone is like, oh, they're taking our 1% this year, these greedy governments. But if you look at your property taxes, in the city of Spokane, it's by far Spokane Public Schools is the biggest chunk of it.
Biggest chunk, yeah. One, we also have the state side. And, you know, we had the McCleary decision that said that we're operating at too much reliance on local levies and bonds, and it was supposed to be funded constitutionally at the state level. Right. So then the state dumped in tons of money. We're now at like $20,000 per student in Spokane Public Schools in District 81. That's insane. It's insane.
It is.
And I think that that's where we're at in all places in government, not just education. And it's not just the building and the art, and then we got to have all the specialists, and you know, we keep creating jobs and categories for folks, just like we were talking about the state budget. Now they want to fund mental health professionals for infants and toddlers in childcare. Really?
I don't even know how you administrate something like that.
But that's where we've gone as a government. We're just going to fund everything all the time. So at the city level, the stuff that we should be protesting with our ballots and maybe more, our voices, speaking to our council members, speaking to our legislators about not funding municipal governments in these ways. What do you think is the answer? Because I know that there's a lot of things that you would like to see happen in your community. It costs money. Where do we pull back? Where do we start the fiscal sanity to where we don't have a at the local level?
Well, it starts at the council and the mayor's office. I mean, that is the brass tacks about where it begins, because there are the two. When the Condon administration came in, because I was under the Verner administration in my first term, and you had no idea how the thing is going to come on. Yeah, and they actually ended up pushing through the water rates. And that was
like 16-18% a year. It was high.
It was huge. And it was the, you know, a lot of people have nice lawns. You know, lucky for me, it probably had something to do with me winning that year, because, and even David Condon, I mean, if you look at July in his primary, he lost by 30 points in the primary and then won by 4. It's because
it was the water rates.
Water rates, those water bills hit about mid-October, right about the time the ballots dropped.
Yeah.
And it was like bang. But we had a very specific,
well, that's when we saw a lot of middle class, you know, Shadle Park, a lot of different places around town where the working class no longer had green yards.
Yeah, they started letting them die. My neighbors did. Yeah.
And they're still dead, a lot of them.
Yeah. Nah, ours, in my neighborhood, they came back alive, thank goodness. Yeah. But it took one neighbor a couple years to bring it back. But going back, we had some very basic investment principles as it came in, and budget principles. One is you never approve ongoing expenditures with one-time money. This last administration, I'll say it with the Woodward administration, that was not the case. They produced a lot of jobs and programs, and the city council. Ultimately, it's the council that approves the budget.
Right. Well, the executive branch, a lot of people, because of how we worship presidents and executive leaders, governors, nothing happens without the legislative branch approving it.
The executive branch's
job is to execute the will of the elected representatives.
Right. Well, and we were talking about this, and the mayor and the equivalency of the president are the executives. Presidents get way too much credit for how good economy is or how bad an economy is, because they honestly have nothing to do with the economy. It's the Fed and it's Congress.
Yeah.
It's fiscal and it's monetary policy that drive it.
The only way I think I would debate on that one is that presidents that follow the legislative laws that are good, and if those following those laws results in economic prosperity, then the president can say, I was a good executive and I followed the good laws the legislature laid out. Whereas like the lawlessness we have now in our executive branch, I think is damaging our economy horribly. I mean, the fentanyl, the homelessness, the
I think at the drug state cartels. Level, certainly. Governor Inslee, in my personal opinion, is a complete failure as a governor.
Well, I think federal and state. I mean, we're seeing it, the crime, the cost of crime, everybody's insurance rates going up, all the different things. So executives were following the laws, if we were arresting criminals. Enforcing the laws. There would be economic outcomes that would be more positive. So executives can have an impact, but oftentimes they're given credit when really they're just executing what the legislative branch laid out, or they're not.
Or choosing not to. But ultimately, they're just about enforcing the policies. I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Very, very little impact, in my personal opinion. Presidents, in particular, have way more impact on foreign policy than they do on domestic policy.
And foreign policy is a very important aspect of our economy as well. Our trade partners, you know, how tariffs, things like that. You know, we used to not have property taxes, but we still had public schools because we funded our schools off of tariffs.
I did not know that. Yeah. How far back does that go?
Well, about Biden would remember it.
yeah. Well, it means Trump can too. They're roughly the same age.
That's true. That's Trump. Trump might remember that as well. And he might. Well, his dad certainly was a property taxpayer probably at that point in time too.
I guarantee it.
So when we look at this, because we have to come to, you say you're more socially moderate. Now, how moderate does that go? Because here's a fiscal thing that's going to affect our schools. We said sure. That's a big thing. And we're just going to close the show out with this one. And people have to come back next time with Mike Allen to follow up on this. So the legislature told the schools that they have to fund aspects in and throughout curriculums in the public schools that recognize certain demographics. We'll just put it that way. People that don't identify as the gender that they were born with. Right. And that's what's going to be more spending in education. I don't think you're that socially moderate. I think we don't even have children that are leaving high school with able to read, do math. And the legislative branch is going, I think, beyond the constitutional role of government. That's not education. That's sci-fi.
So there has been a very distinct movement in the state of Washington and in most liberal states, California being another one, that they want to be the parent of the child, not the parent parenting the child. They get to choose all the curriculum that's presented. They get to choose the environment that they're in. The policies and procedures are from their state legislative bodies. And yeah, they are spending so much money on a lot of stuff that they really probably shouldn't be weighing in on from a personal family decision.
But like having mental health professionals for infants and toddlers and, you know, childcare. So,
well, I don't think it's not, maybe do it under a contract if you identify a student, because that is one thing the schools do. They identify maybe children who are not getting the kind of care at home they should be getting.
Right.
And can help with some of those inroads.
Right. And I think teachers do a good job at that, but I think that we've locked out the parents. We've handcuffed the teachers in being able to interact in those ways. And I think, you know, we've handcuffed the police in the same way. So we fund all of this stuff, but it has almost no effectiveness because we've given people no power to do anything. It gets pushed to one department or pushed over there. It's like the homeless problem. Just build another shelter, right? That's going to be the thing.
The homeless problem is a drug problem.
It is. Well, and that's part of the problem is we have lawmakers and policymakers that don't actually identify the problem to get the solution. They just throw money at it. So we're going to have to run out the door for today. I'm going to thank Mike Allen for coming in. I got to have you back because I know there was a lot more that you wanted to say on the local level. So yeah. Folks, remember, Mike Allen is out there still running around spreading fiscal sanity, and we need more people to think along those lines.
Here's a piece of insanity for you. We're paying the interest on our debt at the federal level is larger than our defense budget now.
Yeah, the military-industrial complex is
smaller
than our
debt interest payment.
It's insanity. We got to stop this train. We're headed towards a cliff. All that being said, we'll be with you folks again tomorrow.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Right Spokane Perspective. We are sponsored by Right Spokane Perspective LLC and made possible by advertisers you hear and contributions from listeners like you.